My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert, recording this episode for Sunday, May 1st, 2022. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. If you're really into this thing, go over to Apple Podcasts, give the show a 5-star review, let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. And if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival. Subscribe for $3 a month for hours and hours and hours of bonus content. Shout out to Ariel for hitting me up on Patreon, letting me know that there was stuff that needed to be updated on the site so that more people could subscribe to the one tier that I have. I mean, I'm not going to be greedy. I just like you to support the show. You get a couple bonus episodes a month. Still working on the new thing from my college radio show days and trying to get that right. And you'll have it if you join for $3 a month. Hours and hours and hours of bonus content. This is episode 571. I have a super special guest, comedian, voiceover actor, cartoonist, Greg Morton from America's Got Talent. I'm super excited to share that conversation that I had with him. I'm going to share it with you in a bit. Right now, I just want to talk to you for a few moments. I'm sitting here in my apartment, letting you behind the curtain. This episode's going up on May 1st. I'm recording this on April 30th, this intro. But my conversation that I had with Greg was about a week ago. That's how production works, folks. You put it in the can, you tack an intro on it, and you put it out there for a few hundred people to listen to. And it still brings me joy, no matter how many people listen, no matter how many people are subscribed to my Patreon. It still makes me feel good. All right, so this week's been pretty good. I don't know about you guys, but I had an exotic fruit. Do you call a pink glow pineapple, is that exotic? Is it? Because I never had a pink pineapple before. I've seen them in the stores in recent months. And I said, you know what, Chris? You've had a good week. You're a good guy. Let's have some pink glow pineapples with your yogurt for breakfast. And I did that, and they were good. They were really good. $6 cut up in chunks at Wegmans, but it better be good, and they better have been sweet and tasty. But that was my first time having that exotic fruit, and I did enjoy that. What else did I do? I beat Horizon Forbidden West. That's really fun, a great game. That was fun. I'm looking for something else to play. I put up a poll. I was thinking, like, do I go back to Ghost of Tsushima, start that over? Do I start Zelda over? Do I start the Breath of the Wild? Because the new one's probably coming out next year, or it got delayed. So, or should I finish Metroid Prime? Metroid Prime is pretty hard. It's very good, but I feel like I'm pretty cool because a lot of my friends were afraid of that game. And I was like, dude, you're 40. Why are you afraid of a video game? So I'm thinking about something else to play. I also have this game called Tunic that I downloaded on my laptop. That's also very good. I'm like 2 hours into that, maybe. Well, not even 2 hours, an hour into that. Anyway, who cares? Girls don't care about video games, Chris. You're not going to get a girl by telling her that you played video. Anyway, so I've been doing that. Go over to Patreon for some other stuff I've been talking about. I am in currently got two more shows left at Levity Live this weekend, opening for Tammy Pescatelli. They've been fun. They've been a lot of fun. I'm feeling good about my art as an artist, working on his craft. Been having fun. I did not bomb on the Friday Late Show, and I didn't. I didn't bomb. I had a really good set. So it's not even one of those. I got through it. I had a good set. Yeah. So it's been a pretty good week, and you know, I just want to get you guys to Greg Morton. Greg, I met Greg earlier this month. I met him in early April when I was in Utica working on doing my shows at Fat Cats. He was in town doing shows in Albany, and we did morning radio together. And I was like, and he had on a PlayStation sweatshirt, and I was like, "Do you play video games?" Like, "Oh, we got to talk about video games." So we talked a little bit. I was like, "Oh, you got to come on my podcast." And at the time, at the time of this recording, he hadn't found a PlayStation 5, but he hit me up on Monday and was like, "I finally got one." I was like, "Oh man!" And he's playing Horizon Forbidden West. So we had a great conversation. Talked a little bit about gaming. Talked about some stand up, and you'll get that. So right now, I want to share my conversation with Greg Morton with you. Enjoy it, everybody. You were worried about being late. I was more worried than you. You were on time. I was more worried than you because I was in the thick of playing Horizon Forbidden West. So I was like, let me get some in. Let me get some more time. I was just so immersed in that world. So I was like, I don't want to miss Greg.
You know what? I almost got a PlayStation 5 yesterday.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, this kid, he promised me. He said, yeah, we got a shipment coming in on Saturday. I go like, oh, great. Here's my number. Call me. He never called.
You got to stay on him, man. You got to stay on people like that. Like, he never called you back, or did you call him? Or
he never called me back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Yeah, it really does. It could be that maybe they were, you know, they got snapped up online.
Yeah.
Or maybe they didn't get that many, you know, but I think in the past he said, oh man, what happened? I lost your number. Give it to me again. And I gave it to him on Friday. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, well, how can he lose it in one day? But he's a kid. He probably did.
Was it a big box store, or was it like a mom and pop type store?
It was a GameStop.
Okay. Okay. So he probably just got rid of it. I bought a Nintendo Switch in November, mm-hmm. and I was getting my car fixed, and then I just happened to go to get lunch in this small town in New Jersey. And I was like, oh, I've been following this store on Instagram for so long, and there's just like this little mom and pop store. And I was like, the Nintendo Switches were kind of scarce at that point. And I was like, I bet they're going to have it, and I'm going to have to spend money that I don't want to spend, but I want to get system. And so they had one, but they didn't have the OLED. And I was like, you know what? Let me just get it. Yeah. And I got Metroid Dread and like the Zelda game that I never opened up yet.
Breath of the Wild?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I just started playing that. What a great game.
Yeah. I heard that's like that. I think IGN or one of these game websites voted that as like the top open world game of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's very, very good. It doesn't hold your hand. You know, you got to look around and discover things. And I didn't even know how to make health. I was just running around and collecting apples out of trees and mushrooms and stuff. I didn't know that you could cook stuff. I figured there was a way to cook because there was a pot lid. And I thought, well, there must be some way to cook in this.
Yeah.
So yeah, you have to hold all of your items and then put them over top of this campfire pot, and you also have to light a fire under it.
So are you
cook things and manufacture things?
Are you one of those guys who don't look at guides on YouTube?
I try not to.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do. If I get stuck, I just get to.
Well, we only have so much time.
Yeah. I got to this point where I just said, look, I paid $70 for this game. I'm going to finish it. And I don't care. Like, maybe if I wanted to put the difficulty up, I'll go back. But, you know, it's just not worth it. When I don't know if you know this comedian, Mike Lawrence, who's he was New York based for a while. Now he's out in L.A. He's a writer. Really funny dude. He kind of made himself as like the king of the, like this nerd comedian. And so one time I had him on the podcast and we were talking. He was just like, yeah, you know, I use strategy guides or I put it on easy. And I was like, what? I was like, if this dude does it, who's this nerd guy? That changed my life. I was like 32 at the time. I was just like, why should I even care if I just finish this game and have this experience that I have, you know, and enjoy the game how I want to enjoy it. So,
well, it's like you and I were talking about earlier. We play for the story.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing to us. Now, do you play on normal or easy?
I play normal for the most part. Most of the time, I play normal. I don't do the higher difficulty or anything like that. Now, the only game that I did this was that I switched the levels was on The Last of Us Part Two. Like,
yes.
After I beat it the first time, I would just go back and do different encounters and sequences. Yeah. And
that's me too. If I really love a game, I will go back and do it on the higher difficulty.
Yeah. That's the only game.
Play it and, oh, yeah. I love that game.
Can we talk about this? Because I don't get to talk
about
it
that much. The Last of Us Part Two, but I mean The Last of Us Part One.
Well, that was
The Last of Us Two. I'm very conflicted about, but
well, let's talk about that. Well,
yeah, sure.
We'll talk about the first one. I think the first one was amazing, and it was just like it was just something that I didn't know that I needed, and it was just such a really intense.
Now, when you say needed, what do you mean by that?
The time that I played it, this girl that I liked, this woman I liked, just didn't like me as much as I liked her. Mm-hmm. And I picked the game back up. I had bought the game. It came out in June of 2013. I bought it like around November of that year. I played it. I got to the point where you first meet the clickers in the subway. I got stuck and I just got pissed off and I just stopped. And then a few months later, I found out that they were coming out with that DLC Left Behind in February. So I said, you know what? Let me just finish this game. And I just spent like almost a whole day just going through the rest of the game and just like fell in love with that, with Ellie and Joel and just was really engrossed in the story. And I was like, oh, wow, that was something. That was really amazing. That was a really great experience playing that game. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that I needed. I was like, oh, man, that was really fulfilling, you know, just enjoyed it.
Wow, that's great. And go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and what about you? What did you think of?
Well, the first time I played it, I loved it. Obviously, I like zombie type games anyway. I know they're not zombies, but, you know.
Right.
And I played that. Oh, I can't remember how many times through.
Oh. Yeah,
I play it at least once a year. I try to anyway. I love the story.
Yeah,
but it's the second game that I had a problem with. See, the first game made me feel like I was a dad, like I was Ellie's dad.
Yes,
and right. I think that that's what it brought that out in me. Like, oh my gosh, I didn't know I had such a nurturing side.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm going. So then, when they killed spoiler alert, when they killed Joel. I'm going like, oh no, now what?
Yeah.
Now I'm not the dad anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, you know, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And I thought, I figured they would probably kill Joel or something would happen.
Right.
But I didn't know it was going to be at the beginning of the game. And I didn't know you were going to have to play as another character.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I found it to be at times a bit of a slog. Like, it's a really long game.
A slog at what point? Was it with Ellie or with Abby?
Abby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Abby. I couldn't get into that character.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I needed to take a break. I know one thing that I shouldn't have done. I shouldn't have tried to crush through and play through to the end of the story. I was trying to get to the end of the story. I don't think that's how that game should be played.
I think... I agree right? with you 100%. Did because I did the same thing. I have a day job. I took time off. So it came out on a Friday. I started playing at midnight, and then I took that Friday off, and I took the Monday off, and I beat it that Monday afternoon.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
And all of my friends, because I was upset. I was so excited for it. That was like during the pandemic, that was probably one. Having my friends, connections with my friends over Zoom, podcasting, and all that was great, and great for my sanity, being away from my family and everything like that. But just that was one of the best parts of that year for me. And I shouldn't have done that. All my other friends were just like, oh yeah, it took me about a month, or it took me a few weeks. And I was just like, 4 days.
Yeah. Well, we were so hungry for it. I mean, how long it had been since the first game?
It would. So 2013, it came 7 years, 7 years.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that makes sense.
And all the leaks. So you seem like you didn't get caught up in the leaks or any of the drama on YouTube and the internet.
I tried to stay away from it. I heard maybe one thing, and I thought, well, that doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't care. And then when I got into the game, I didn't really feel like that was the case.
Yeah.
At all. I thought she was just really buff. Mm-hmm. And we had to be.
Building
if you
her
were
body
going to survive in that world, your body is going to change.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have a problem with that either. Yeah.
Even if she was, it wouldn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't have a problem with that. Like I was spoiled. I was following it because I was hungry for every piece of information that you could get. But it still didn't take away from that game. To me, I thought it was great. I definitely understand where you can get bogged down with Abby. But I guess it was just like they wanted to show you, the two sides and the duality and blah, blah, blah. The one character go to outer space. The other one is scared of heights. All the duality. Yeah, right. And it's like, okay, we get it, Naughty Dog. I get it, Neil Druckmann. I know what you're doing. And they did it well, but it was just like, okay, this is a little too long. And go ahead.
Well, here's what the problem is. I think that the gameplay is very good.
Yes.
But after 30 hours, it becomes repetitive. Mm-hmm. And that's where the slog part came in for me. I go like, wow, I want to get through this story and I'm pushing. And yet the gameplay is just, it wasn't fun. Like there was a surprise around every corner in the first game.
Right.
You were learning new skills. And I think you should always push the player to learn new skills and beef up their character.
Yeah.
All the games have RPG elements in them now.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, they do. They do. And it was weird. Interesting. Cause like with the part two, you couldn't fully upgrade your character just in one playthrough. You'd have to go back and, that was the first game in the history that I went back to try to platinum since they had the trophies. I had never platinumed the game. And then 2 weeks after I had platinum, they came out with that permadeath. You play through it. I was like, oh, I'm not doing that.
I'm not into that.
No.
I'm into fun.
Yeah.
I can see how, if you're really good at the game, how permadeath would be that extra level of challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was great. It was just a great experience. I mean, I felt that they delivered, but I definitely understand why people got bogged down and felt the way people feel the way that you do about it. I mean, it's not a perfect game, but I don't know. It made me question Ellie, question her motives. And I still think prior to Ellie, like modern day characters, I would say she was my favorite video game character of all time. It used to be Lara Croft. Mm-hmm. But I feel like The Last of Us is a little more grounded than Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
You know,
I have to agree. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love the Tomb Raider reboot that they did because so good. It got me back
so good.
In. And, you know, I talked about this a long time ago on the show where, like, I felt like, you know, there's all this stuff against
the game, I'm sure you don't partake in it, or you're not in, or maybe you might not even be aware of it, but like all that Gamergate stuff where it's like, trashing women and all this stuff. It's like, if more dudes played these games with these female heroines, I think you'd treat women better. You know, like,
you know, I got to say, whenever I play a game, if there's a female character, I always pick the female character.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. Always. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a little more.
I would say ever since Resident Evil, the first one, way back then.
Okay.
Ben and Lara Croft, those two characters really got me into female characters.
That's what did it for me, because I was about 16 when Tomb Raider came out. My late great dad, I remember him bringing it home to me.
Wow.
From KB Toys. I don't know if you. From KB Toys, 96. He got off work, got me for PlayStation. And it was downstairs in our basement, and it was we had like a 32-inch Magnavox TV.
Wow!
That first level, you fight a dinosaur, like that big old dinosaur is coming at you, and it was intense. It was So after that, and then with the reboot, you got to teach her. It's like her becoming Lara Croft, and it's like you have so much invested in her. And you don't want any dudes trying to attack her. One dude tries to like sexually harass you or assault, really. And you guys are like, get off of me, dude.
Yes.
You know,
like, same with Ellie. Same thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like with Ellie, like you're with her since she's a girl. She's 14. And now she's grown up. You feel protective over her. And some of these decisions that she's making in part two is just like, oh, my God, I can't believe Ellie. What are you doing? What are you, and that leads you to some of that conflict. But I think great characters don't always have to be like so clear cut, like good.
I agree.
Yeah.
Because in real life, we're not that way.
Right. Right.
You know, there are always shades of gray. Nothing's black and white.
Yeah.
And you're more invested in the character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so when I met you, cause I had known about you, I want to get into your comedy too, but it's always good to talk video games with somebody because it's when I saw
thought that's you, what your show is all about.
Oh, about video games? No. It's about a little bit of everything. We do.
I was hoping.
Yeah, but I definitely want to keep talking about it as much as we can. But like you had on a PlayStation sweatshirt when I met you in Utica. And I was like, oh, you're a gamer? And I would have been pissed if you weren't, because if you'd have said no and you have that PlayStation hoodie on. I'm like, yeah, like I would have called you a fraud.
I'm a huge PlayStation fan.
What are you playing now?
Well, I'm playing this little indie game called Cloudpunk.
Okay.
And it's just a story game. And I don't know why, but the simplicity of it, I'm really drawn to it. I really like this cyberpunk world.
Okay.
And I wanted to play the new cyberpunk game by, who's the studio? Do you remember?
Oh, God. Let me see. I can look it up.
What studio? They did The Witcher. God. Oh, God. I can't believe I'm blanking out here.
CD
Projekt Red.
Yeah.
And when I got that game, it did not work on my PlayStation at all. In fact, it crashed and crashed, and I go like, "That's it, I'm done."
So many bugs in that one.
So I went and I took it, and I got a refund.
Okay.
I downloaded it digitally, you know. And I go like, "I will never pre-order a game again."
Oh man,
I've been burned so many times these last couple of years.
Do you have
it's
a
been
pro?
Terrible.
What do you have?
Yeah,
do you
have... I have a pro right now.
Okay. Yeah. I bought a pro, especially for Last of Us Part Two, because there were folks on the internet were saying like, if you try to play that on a like a first gen system, it'll take off like a helicopter, like the engine will be like. And I was like, oh no, I'm not ruining
it. Still
that
does.
Yeah.
And so, certain games, man, it really works that thing.
Yeah, my PS5 was overheating, and I had to stop playing Horizon Zero Dawn.
What?
Dude,
I thought they're not supposed to. They quieted the fan and everything.
Well,
really,
if you're playing it, because I haven't played it that much, and in the last two weekends, now Friday night it was doing it, and I said, okay, I've been playing long enough. I got to get
how long?
Oh, At least 3 or 4 hours.
Well, that's not that long.
Yeah. And then
for a gamer.
Yeah. And then Saturday, because I don't even consider myself that hardcore. Like it's yeah. and I'm kind of like I really love the AAA games. I'm a big trip, yeah. like the good one, the story based AAA. I have no problem with, you know, I like a good indie, you know, I like a good, I don't know if you've ever played Inside or
No, but I know which one you're talking about.
Or like Cuphead or, you know,
which Cuphead is brutal. But that the art style is amazing.
It's beautiful. That's one of the most beautiful games I've ever seen. Like I call that game Contra on acid. That's what I call that game. That is insane. But yeah, like it was overheating, and I just said, okay. Then I was planning on yesterday. I had gotten home at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then it started overheating, and because it'll cut off. And I said, let me just cut it off. And then I cut it back on a couple hours later. It was fine. But I looked on YouTube and you can take it apart and do it. I'm not doing that.
Maybe get somebody to do it for you.
Yeah, I'll take it to
put some more paste on it.
Yeah.
New paste, right?
I'll take it to You Break, I'll Fix, whatever. Yes. It's a place like in a couple towns over from me. It's a chain, but yeah, it didn't really give me any trouble today. I've been playing it for a long time.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So. I would imagine it's pretty intensive. It probably works your PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
Quite a bit, that game. Yeah.
Yeah.
The worlds are massive.
It's massive, dude. And you go underwater, like, because you can get this mask and you can just go, you can breathe underwater. It's insane.
Dude, you're killing me right now.
Well, you could play it on your PS4. And then when you get the 5, you can update it through the cloud.
Yeah, I guess so.
So you could still play.
But then I'll have all PS4 games.
Are they downloaded? Are they digital or?
Half and half. Some are digital, some are disc.
You should still be able to play them. Yeah. Like I can play the.
No, I will be able to play them, but I mean, it's a hassle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And it doesn't hold that much memory. I was thinking of getting.
That's true.
More memory added to it, but that game, I mean, for me it was Miles Morales when the system launched 2 years ago now, and everybody was saying, oh my god, Miles Morales, you know. And I said, you know what, I'm just gonna buy it for PS4 and the upgrade is free, and I had to play it. So
did you notice the difference when you played it on upgraded?
I'm not one of those. What's that place? It's a video game or digital sophistry on YouTube. Like one of these dudes that are really hardcore.
Digital Foundry.
Foundry. Okay, sophistry is another thing. Digital Foundry, where they're like showing you a PS4 version and then the Pro, and then
got the graph in the background going up and down.
I'm just like,
how many frames per second you're getting? Yeah. Oh, here the gameplay dips down to 40 frames per second.
Yeah, I like hearing them talk about that stuff, but I don't. I was like, I can't really see it. It looks great. It looks great. I have a nice TV. It's fine, but you know, like,
tell me a
story. Give me a good, you know, it looks, it does look great.
Agreed.
I just like Angela Bassett is in Horizon Forbidden West. And
oh, nice.
It is so, it's incredible. Like she's chewing up scenery and she's like she's an adversary. It's so good. Me. You got to play it. Like it made me think, and this is a bit of a tangent, and I don't know where you stand on these like sci-fi movies and stuff like that. I just saw this movie called The Northman. Came out, and it's fantastic. It's I call it White 12 Years a Slave meets God of War with a dash of Hamlet. And
nice.
And it's good.
Really?
It's very good. And and my listeners know I'm not a big period piece guy, because there's not that many black people in them sometimes, and then it just, you can kind of get bogged down. But this one was beautifully shot, the acting's great. And it's fantastic. But I was thinking, you know, like they don't have that many people of color in films like that and doing those action movies and stuff. But in Horizon the Horizon Zero Dawn series, they've got all ethnicities in these things. And even though you're in a world where it's in the future, but everything was so bombed out that people are reverting back to these tribal times and, yes, and things like that. And you're seeing these people from these different cultures. And me looking at Angela Bassett, I just made this connection. So just go with me on it.
Okay.
But it's like, wow, that you don't really see that, you know, you don't really see that tribal, like that speaking and talking in this language of the nether region of the whatever the hell it is, you know, speaking in that high language, elevated language, and doing some of those cool things that you see in movies like The Northman, right. I will avenge you, father, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I want to see more people of color in there. But then, mm-hmm, I don't know, I'm rambling on that, but
well, they did some a diversity casting with the Vikings TV series.
Oh, they did.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I think it's called Valhalla.
Okay.
So it takes place 100 years after the first Vikings series.
Mm.
And anyway, it's quite good. I love that Vikings series. It's
okay. Yeah. I'll have to check that out, because I really love seeing that. And Angela Bassett, like, she's amazing in it. And
of it's course just like, she well, is.
It's like, I love to see more Black people doing cool stuff like that. And Horizon, yeah, Forbidden West has Black chiefs and Black, you know, a brown, all different shades of color. And it's really cool. It's a beautiful tapestry that they've created with those worlds in these two games. So people can see themselves. Of course, the heroine is a redheaded white girl.
Would you say that games are ahead of Hollywood, or they're about neck and neck?
That's a good
question. As far as diversity casting goes.
You know, when you think of like God of War, the voice being of a Black dude, but the character's white, you know, he's Greek, but it's like he's voiced by a Black dude. Mm-hmm. Man. And then when they did the trailer for the new one for Ragnarok, it was a Black giant and people got mad about that. Like, I was really? Like, oh my God, there's one character at the end of the trailer who's like, I guess a pivotal or a supporting character. People were going crazy over that on the internet, but then a lot of times that doesn't really matter. I would say they are neck and neck to a certain Hollywood kind of, I would say maybe the film industry, TV film is at the forefront, because you're still kind of seeing some of these protagonists, at least women, are primary characters in the video games. A lot of them, they're not true people of color. And the people of color are like, they're there, but they're ancillary. They get killed. And it's just like, but,
You know what the problem is that they may be in production right now.
That's
but
true.
We haven't seen them yet.
Yeah.
You know, these games take 5, 6, 10 years to make some of them. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be nice to see more.
Now, Grand Theft Auto has always had a pretty diverse cast.
They're stealing stuff, Greg. They fulfilling stereotypes. You know, like the main guy's like a Black dude with a you can't say wife beater anymore, but an athletic tee. He's stealing people's cars. It's good. No, it's cool though, but I think we're moving along in the right direction though. After looking game like Horizon Zero Dawn and The Last of Us Part Two, but it's like you look at these games. Okay, put a Black person at the lead of this game. Like Jeffrey Wright was in Part Two. You had an Asian character in it who was a pivotal character. The LGBTQ characters. So it's definitely, they're definitely making headway.
Well, you know, during the pandemic, I auditioned for a lot of characters of color.
That's good.
Yeah.
Like live action or voice work?
Animation and video games.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you done any that you could talk about?
No, I can tell you that I auditioned for the new Spider-Man.
Okay.
Miles Morales movie.
That's cool.
Because I know that's coming out, right? So
yeah.
I don't know any of the, yeah.
I know it got pushed back, but that game, that movie was amazing.
Yeah, oh, the first one so was good.
Fantastic.
So good.
It actually beat the one best animated feature. It beat the Disney movie of that year, which always wins.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Are you into animation at all, or?
I watch the movies. I'm interested in that Lightyear movie that's coming out. I pretty much
doesn't that look great?
It does look great. It looks like one of those movies that'll probably. I mean, Turning Red made me cry a little bit.
I love that movie.
Yeah, that was really good. I try to watch as much as I can. So I watch a lot, but I do. But I like when it comes to those superhero animated ones, I don't really. I know there's like so many of the Batmans and all that. It's a lot. I hear they're good, but I just have to be exposed to it. I don't have any like.
I watched one the other day. I can't remember which one it was.
Okay.
I think it was Killing Joke.
Okay.
It was good, but I just like live action. Like now, I'm obsessed with the new Batman with Pattinson.
Robert Pattinson. You did you liked it?
I bought it.
You didn't have to get it on HBO Max?
I've seen it four times.
Jeez.
I've seen it three times in the theater, and then I just bought it digitally and I watched it last night with my wife.
Okay. I did really like it. When I had one of my good friends on, Tim Hall, he was telling me, you know, it was year two of him being Batman, right?
Right.
Then he was starting to learn how to be. And I was like, oh, right. Okay, yeah, so that puts it into perspective for me. And then I did enjoy it more. I liked it when I saw it. I'm going to watch it again because it's on HBO Max now.
I think it requires more than one viewing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I noticed that the more I watched it, the more things I noticed. It's still a bit long. That would be my only criticism.
Yeah.
But I mean, at home, at least I can pause it and I can go to the bathroom and come back and not miss anything.
Yeah.
But I love that world. Now, my wife, she found it very dark, very depressing. It's like watching emo Batman or something.
It's very anime Kurt Cobain Batman.
Right.
But I liked it though.
Me too.
Yeah. I liked it. Yeah. That world that they're creating,
Really grounded and very realistic.
Yeah.
And the Rogues Gallery, I love what he did with the Rogues Gallery. You know, Joker, Penguin, Riddler, they seem more realistic. They don't seem like fantasy characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did you like with Dano?
Oh, ridiculous. Yeah. I giggle like a schoolgirl whenever he goes into his monologue. It's so good.
Yeah.
I start giggling.
What did you think about that deleted scene?
No.
Yeah, I gotta get into it. I gotta watch it again. There's just so much content, man. I feel like I just get bogged down that like I want to enjoy these shows and I want to be up on them.
You should watch less crap. That's what you should do.
That's true. I don't think I watch that much crap. I don't think I do. Like, I mean, I really like Atlanta. I love Atlanta. And I was going back and watched a couple episodes that I really enjoyed, like from season two. It's such a good show. And the commentary that they're making, you know, it's just like, and I was like, oh my God, how good is this? This is really good. Like so there's certain shows that I revisit, but
you know what? I shouldn't say that to you, Chris, because the truth is there's too much good content.
That's
the truth of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are in the golden age of television, not so much film, but television for sure.
Yeah.
You know, all of the streaming, all the, you know, Apple and Amazon, Netflix, HBO Max, all of these. Look at all this programming, original programming that we're getting. And it's really good.
Yeah. I just like over Easter, I watched that Samuel L. Jackson show on Apple TV, Ptolemy Gray, whatever that show is.
We're blanking today.
Yeah, I'm.
Can you
the
find
last
it?
Days of Ptolemy Gray and it's based on the Walter Mosley book, and I had heard about it, and it was only 6 episodes, and I was just engrossed. I was like, nobody's talking about this, and it's really good.
Was he producer on that project? Yeah,
him and his wife and Dominique.
See, that's the thing now, right? Mm-hmm. You have to read some books and develop your own projects.
Yeah.
I mean, these people, these companies are desperate for content. Mm-hmm. And this is going to give us all a great opportunity.
Yeah.
To shine. That's all. But we have to come to the forefront. And people have to start saying yes to the projects, too. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe some of that will change. Netflix, with their bags of money, that might be going away after what just happened.
What happened then? I know they raised the prices of the...
200,000 subscribers left, and their stocks started to tank. And right now, people are churning. And what I mean by that is they go and they get the free trial, or they get Netflix for a month, and then they watch everything. They binge watch everything, and then they leave.
Huh.
And then they go to another service.
Wow. I've had it for years. I've had it since the DVDs.
Wow.
At least for like, at least maybe since I've been in the New York area, I want to say at least since maybe 2008, 2009. So for a long time.
That's the thing. The longer you've been with it, the harder it is to cancel. It's like canceling a friend, you know?
Yeah. And
it's like cable, cutting the cord with cable.
I've been on a couple Netflix TV shows, you know, but I do like the service. Yeah. It's good. Like it's, you know, but
it is.
And my dad would watch it, you know, when he was around. He passed away in December, but,
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you,
Chris. I did not know that.
No, that's fine. It's okay. Oh. Yeah. He was great. And
my dad passed in December too. Not this past, but 12 years ago.
Oh man.
Yeah. In December, same thing.
Yeah. Does Christmas suck?
Right? It is so hard.
Yeah. Yeah. He would, you know, he would watch those movies, and I would, I would tell him, oh, watch this movie, check this out. And he'd have all my accounts and all that stuff. So we'd talk about them and all that stuff. So it was good. I liked that service. And then when they upgraded the HD and all that.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of surprised that everything that happened, you know.
Well, they have to keep growing. That's the key. And, you know, new subscribers, more money, more money, more money. You know, it's the. Yeah. So I think they'll find a model. They also were talking about bringing ads in to bring in a cheaper level of subscription for people.
Yeah.
You know, so you could pay less, but you'd have to suffer through ads.
I hate
it. And, right. Everybody hates ads. I don't see how that's a win for anyone.
No, no.
I mean, YouTube, I click, skip, skip. And I know I shouldn't, because I want to support my creators.
Right.
But dang, some of these ads. I mean, come on. An ad should never be an hour long.
Right.
An infomercial, right. I'm watching something for information and an hour long ad comes up.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
I'm going to sit through that.
It's like, dude, I'm trying to learn how to like make like blackened salmon. I don't need a 20-minute ad.
Exactly.
You know, come on. Yeah, it's crazy, man.
Oh, it's
I pay extra for Hulu, so I don't get ads, and I think that's it. I mean, what's upsetting me is the fact that some of these shows that I want to watch, it would normally be on, like, I have Verizon, like the Fios cable or whatever, and. Okay. You could do the on-demand stuff, and when you try to do the on-demand, they'll let you watch the first episode, then they make you pay for episode 3. So you have to. It's a weird thing that they do, unless you sign up for AMC. Like if I want to watch Killing Eve or something like that, I gotta pay.
Well, AMC is great. Has been great lately. They've had a lot of great new programs. So.
It looks like it too. Like Better Call Saul and is back. Yeah. Courtney B. Vance has a show, and I love him, so I want to see that show. So it's like, what do you do? What do you do to get access, unless you just pay for it on iTunes or something like that?
So we churn.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? That's why we keep skipping around. We get what we, it's like a buffet. We go, oh, look at that over there. Mm-hmm. So
whoever's hot, you know, but let's enough about this though. I want to talk about your stand-up. You'd always been somebody that I've seen like on the internet. I know of your works. Oh, this is just, I just know you as a funny working comedian, touring comedian. I met you in Utica. You were doing a gig in Albany. What was that? How was your weekend there in Albany? How was that?
It was very good.
Yeah.
I would say the first night was a little light.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday was much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you did Friday, Saturday or Friday, Saturday?
I did Sunday. Friday, Saturday. Just okay. Friday, Saturday. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And where did it start for you?
Oh gosh. How far back do you want to go?
All the way back.
Where
were you born? What did your mom and dad do?
I was born in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Okay.
And my mom was she worked for the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, when she met my dad.
Wow.
And my dad took up a trade as welding. He was a welder.
Okay.
And then when they moved to Ontario, she got a job as a nurse, and she worked as a nurse for many years, and then moved to moved to a textile factory where she did knitting at this place, and so that she'd have more of a flexible work schedule, so that she could be home with us, my sister and I.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the two of us, my sister and I. So now when I used to watch everything on TV, especially cartoons and things like that, and comedies. My dad, like your dad, was a big fan of movies.
Yeah.
And comedies. He loved comedy. And I would watch all these old comedy, all these comedies and that. In fact, I used to set up a movie theater in my bedroom. So I had one wall painted white, and I borrowed movies from the library, and I watched old Charlie Chaplin movies and Laurel and Hardy and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know why, I was just really attracted to that stuff. So now but with comedy, I did some stand up. Now what was really cool was one of our teachers was really into stand up, and she brought in these classic comedy records and she played them. Now this was when I was in, I think the fourth or I think it was the fourth grade, or maybe it was the, might have been middle school, might have been that. Oh, yeah, it was middle school. So she brought in Bob Newhart, Button Down Mind, Bill Cosby, a few other records that I can't remember. And that really got me into comedy. And then I started doing skits and sketches at school and stand-up routines and impressions. And then when I saw Richard Pryor live in concert, I watched that and I went, wow, this is what I want to do. And I didn't know you could make a living at it. But when I was in college, that's when I really started doing it. And a friend of mine, we were like a comedy duo, but he played guitar and I sang, and I would write the lyrics to all these songs. They were just funny songs. He would write a song in a certain genre, and I'd write funny, dirty lyrics, and I'd sing them, right?
Yeah.
So we had a great time in college. It was so much fun, but you can only go so far with that. And then when we finally went our separate ways, I thought, well, I'm going to give this stand-up thing a try. And that's when I started really getting into it.
And how old were you when you just went solo?
I'd say in my 20s, maybe 22, 23, somewhere around there.
And did you start in Ontario?
Ontario, yeah.
Ontario.
Yes, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
What was the scene like there? Do you have guys that you started with that are
Well, it was growing like crazy because it was the 80s.
The 80s, okay.
Yeah. So, there were a lot of clubs just like in the United States, but not as many, obviously, because we don't have as many major cities as you guys do.
Mm-hmm.
But for a while there, there were like 10, 12 clubs, almost 20 clubs at one time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of one-nighters. So you could really hone your craft. And I worked like crazy. And but it was becoming increasingly more difficult. I met my wife. She wanted to go to the States. I said, yeah, let's go. Let's get out of here. And so she went to New York Law School. And while she was going to school, I was working out at Catch a Rising Star.
Okay.
And I would work out there, my new stuff there. And then I'd go out on the road. And then it was like, oh, a hell of a lot easier.
Yeah.
Because you know what New York is like.
Yeah.
But I found that this was like, well, this is great. This is a great testing ground for my material.
So we're talking about the 80s. You're in New York in the 80s?
80s, no. 90s. Late 80s, early 90s.
Who were you working with back then? Who was in the lineup when you were?
I'll tell you something. When I was at there, Chris Rock came down working out material, and he would just bring his notebook and he would just read the jokes flat.
Yeah.
And whatever response it got, it got. Mm-hmm. And then he would go back and he'd work on it. But he never sold it. He always read it flat. Yeah. I also saw Dave Chappelle. I saw him work out.
Yeah.
I saw Dave Attell.
Yeah.
I saw, oh gosh.
You see Bill Burr?
No, I never did. Okay. Who's the guy that recently got canceled?
Which one? Louis?
Louis.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Louis C.K.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I went out to a gig with him on Long Island there. No, Staten Island, to a place called Grandpa's.
Oh,
do you remember Grandpa's?
It was, No, I've never.
Well, Grandpa's was, do you remember the Munsters?
Yes, yeah.
The TV show?
Yeah.
Well, the guy who played Grandpa Munster, he had a club and it was called Grandpa's. Now, it wasn't really his club. I think it was more his namesake.
Sure.
Or that he sold to them or leased to them, whatever it was.
Right.
And these guys ran it, and it was a fun club. And Andrew Dice Clay used to play there all the time at Grandpa's.
I like Louis. Like he got canceled and everything, but I like, as far as like, I guess he was a little more absurd back then, like his stuff. But like, as far as like, we talk about grounding this with like Batman and stuff, like, coming up, like you have guys that you like before you start, and then people that you kind of start looking at when you're in the game. So like for me, like when I started like 13 years ago, it was like Louis, Burr, and Patrice, like because of that, the aesthetic of just like, I'm a guy, I'm walking on stage. Yes, it's a little heightened version of me, but for the most part, it's just kind of at the core.
Yes.
It's just, I'm just a dude on stage giving you an hour of my thoughts or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who did you, other than like, you know, you mentioned Cosby, Newhart, Pryor, who were you into when you were coming up? Like who else were you?
Well, when I was coming up, when I really was getting into comedy and studying it, I bought everything.
Okay.
I bought a lot of vinyl and I bought old stuff and all the new stuff that was coming out. And I mean everything.
Yeah.
So, but I was really into studying, let's see, Woody Allen, Steve Martin. Those were really good writers to me. Carlin, of course. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it is about listening to Steve Martin or Woody Allen, but it just triggers something in your brain, especially Carlin.
Yeah.
And you feel something click and you go like, it changes you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It changes the side of the brain that you think on. And I think it really helps your writing.
What do you think about, like, are you able, because like we mentioned Cosby and Louis and these guys, are you able to separate the artist from the man and all that kind of stuff, like the faults that they may have had, you know, all the stuff they've done? Are you able to separate the art from the artist?
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. No, it's just, yeah. I just
you
like
have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to do that with everybody. And besides, you could argue that it doesn't come from them. They're just a vessel. Yeah.
Right. Right. Right.
And it comes through them. And whatever life lessons that they learn, that's part of the human experience.
Yeah.
And I think we just got to make everything a teachable moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when these things happen so publicly, I feel that they happen for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Why else would it blow up that big? It's to teach us all a lesson. But where's our compassion for this person? You know, people say that they are so concerned about mental health.
Yeah.
And yet everybody came down on, what's his name? God, I'm blanking out today. Will Smith.
Yeah.
Well, everybody came down on Will Smith. Well, obviously, that guy had a mental breakdown.
Yeah, he's got something going on. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, why? He snapped over that little thing?
Yeah.
That little joke? I mean, right. Obviously, there's something bigger than that.
Right.
And right. I know from what I've read that there's some history there. He had a really rough year last year
mm-hmm.
with the pandemic. He was very depressed. I think he thought about suicide. So I think that maybe he had some kind of breakdown. Well, that doesn't surprise me after what we went through.
Right, right.
Especially with the amount of time that we get to spend in our own heads.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we do, right? As creatives, especially sure. comedians.
Right.
We're in our heads all the time. And sometimes it's a very dark place to be. Right? Don't you yeah. find that? I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, when your dad passed.
Yeah.
You must have went through a really dark period there where you were very down or depressed or
no. I'm still going through it. I mean, this stuff that we're doing, like stuff like this is, and Horizon Forbidden West is stuff that like makes right. me, helps me, because my dad was a type of guy that pressed through. He did his yes. work. He did what he had to do to support
my himself. Dad too. They were his of family. That that generation.
Yeah.
So, you just didn't talk about your emotions.
Right. Right. Yeah.
You just sucked it up and you went.
Yeah.
Soldiered through.
Yeah. So it's like, cause your comedy, like you're very versatile. You do the voices and I watched your Dry Bar special. It was really funny. And I think it's a skill to be clean. Not that I'm a dirty comic, but it's a skill to be clean and to do it with like so much versatility. So I always admire and act like you, like a comic like you that can do that and also be slightly subversive as well, where it's like, you know, you're in front of these white people and then you got some, you're in Utah, but you still got some kind of like a couple of digs, you know, like, you know, you let them know a little bit of something. You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Yeah. Talk. So like, how do you,
but you don't get in their face. It,
right.
I,
right.
That's what I think the huge mistake is. As soon as you go, white people do this mm-hmm. and black people do that. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, no, that's not.
It's
the right
been
way.
Done so much.
Yeah. 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 That's not good anymore.
It doesn't work anymore.
Right.
It's
right.
done. And it's been done better by other comedians.
Sure. Sure.
You know, I was lucky. I was very fortunate to have that moment early on in my career.
Yeah.
And I was doing a gig outside of New York, Hudson River, can't remember where it was, some okay. bar. And I got heckled and I said to my wife, I said, why am I getting all these hecklers? And it's all racial stuff.
Mm.
And she said, well, maybe it's your material. You know, it's all racial material.
Oh, you were doing racial material?
I was back then. Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, that's what I thought you were supposed to do. I didn't know anything about what okay. you were, you know, supposed to do or how you approach it or.
Yeah.
And I go, you know what? Yeah, you're right. I just need to drop this whole thing. It's not me anyway. And other comics have done it better.
Yeah.
I'm just doing it because I love Richard Pryor and.
Yeah. Okay.
And Eddie Murphy. So I was basically.
You were finding
copying yourself. Those. Exactly. Yeah.
But exactly. it's okay to talk about, like, I'll talk about it race is. In my act, but yeah. what I'm saying, what I'm giving you props for is the fact that, like, I'm listening to your set, I'm watching it, and you just kind of, it's like you're slipping it in, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not like you're trying to be, I don't know any other way to, for lack of a better term, to me, it's subversive, it's interesting, it's like, it's a little, it's, there's nuance to it. To say like, yeah, I know I'm a black dude up here, but I'm still gonna talk what I talk. And I think you closed on like a police getting pulled over or getting pulled over bit.
Yeah.
Basically. Right. So right. It's like, it's not like it's like, I'm avoiding the topic of being a black
face. But isn't it true though?
Yeah.
But you know what it is, Chris, you got to address the elephant in the room.
Yes. Yes.
Before you can move on and talk about what you want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So you do that right up front. You get that out of the way.
Yeah.
And then you can talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's like building that relationship, letting them trust you. And that's
otherwise they just sit there and they go, he's black. He's black. He's black. He's black. He's black. When is he going to talk about being black? He's black. He's black. He's black. And it would be the same if you were a woman or you had one leg or cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
It wouldn't matter. You have to talk about the elephant in the room.
So how far in were you when you decided to just make that shift and to just be who you are, just to be great?
I got to think here.
Okay, maybe that's fine.
About, I'd say more than 5 years. I'd say 5, 6.
Yeah.
6 or 7 years, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems kind of average, though. Like when, when you start
Maybe even 8, really.
Yeah. When you start to find yourself. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, please. And there's the maturity factor, too.
Yeah. Right? So you'd have been like,
if you're in your 20s, it's
different. You've been like 29, 30.
Yeah.
When you, yeah.
So exactly. Yeah. So probably in my early 30s is when it happened.
Yeah.
And that,
And how long did you spend working in New York, like on a regular basis, like in the tri-state area?
2 years, maybe.
Okay. Did you like it? Like,
no.
No. Okay. Why didn't you like
it? I did not like it. I would say, okay, I had a love-hate relationship for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I loved what it taught me.
Yeah.
That was the biggest thing. And it was hard, but hey, it should be. It's New York.
Yeah.
So I knew what I was getting into. I just didn't like, it wasn't for me. Yeah. I think that it's better for spoken word comics.
Mm.
And I was more of a variety, more of an entertainer.
Yeah.
So I'm more visual as well.
Sure.
And I think someone like myself would do better in Los Angeles than New York. But then New York, Los Angeles is a whole nother scene too.
Yeah. I've never done anything in LA. The only California stuff I've done has been in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different, I guess it is different. And then probably when I started in 2009, I haven't been doing it. I've been doing like 13, 14 years. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of like, and it was it's a different New York where it was just like there's the ignorance of starting here, even being from the Maryland, DC area.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ignorance of just kind of, you just start where in the city that you're at, but it just so happens that the city you start at is the one of the most intense cities to be in when it comes to this craft, but you kind of trudge your way through those open mics.
You do. I think it, in a way it makes you better.
Yeah.
Well, not in a way, it definitely makes you better. Well, it obviously depends on how much work you put into it.
Right, right, right.
But it forces you in that direction to find your own voice quickly.
Yeah.
And to follow it.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, boo. Get out, boot next.
Yeah.
You got to be real. I mean, you're in a city full of, and yet it's such a small town.
Right, right.
That's the other thing. And that's what I hated about it.
Mm.
I didn't like that part. I thought it was kind of clicky.
Oh, it still is. I mean, but that's everywhere though.
I guess so.
I was talking to one of my good friends that I went to grad school with, and we were talking about Chicago because I trained in Chicago. Got my master's degree in acting in Chicago.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about, I was like, we were at lunch and I said, hey man, do you think we did the right thing sticking with this thing, this career? Like, you have all these other friends like that, we said like, oh, that guy was really good looking. He was a handsome dude. He got this part on this TV show and he quit and he stopped. And then and then we was and my friend said, I think you just love being a dad. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay. You know, you could think a guy that had it where it's like, yeah, all right, well, yeah. And then I said, did you feel did you feel like you stayed in Chicago too long? Because that's a it's a big city, but it's got a small town vibe. And right? You could be comfortable there. You could be you comfortable could. Working and just being that guy and you're on that thing and then but just stay there and not really grow. And it's just like I felt like I left at the right time because there were a lot of dudes, a lot of dudes that were I was 25 year old. There were a lot of dudes like me. I wanted to do August Wilson stuff. I wasn't old enough to do it. And now I'm old enough. I'm 42. But there were guys that like and I was just like, I got to go somewhere else. Like I got to.
Of course.
I can't just.
That's the only way that you grow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the only way that you accumulate life experience.
Right.
And then you take that and then you put it into your acting.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a no brainer. And yeah. I think you just have to ignore and pretty much, well, you have to ignore all the negative stuff and just put your head down and just work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're in your own race. You're not racing with anybody else. That actor over there or that comedian in that over there, you know, right. You are in a race with yourself. You know, you only have so much time on this planet. So
right.
You just... You should don't pay attention to any of that stuff. That's what I learned.
Yeah. Talk about some of the stuff that you were doing, like with like America's Got Talent. Like it was what 2020, right?
Was 19.
2019. What did what how was that experience? Because I like the fact that look, I don't watch those shows because it's one of those things that it's like people with dreams. And it's like, I don't like to see people get their dreams. It just makes me nervous. That American Idol stuff and all that stuff. You see a comic that's on there, like rooting for that person. Good luck to that guy. And then I watch a scripted TV show or I play a video game. Because it just messes me up. So I did watch some of your performances on there. They were great. What's going through your mind when you're up there in front of all those people and Simon Cowell is judging you?
Well, I was fortunate that I'd had so many years in performing on stage that I could just turn it on.
Okay.
And then turn it off.
Gotcha.
And now, obviously, was I nervous? Of course I was.
Yeah.
But it wasn't nearly as bad as what it would have been if it had happened to me 10 years earlier.
Mm.
Like, I probably would have imploded.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe, why do you think maybe. So? Why do you think you would have?
Well, I know because I had this thing where I had this. Everybody has this self-talk, right? Mm-hmm. And mine, I think, was kind of negative. And I remember the first time I had one of my first big breaks. I'm trying to remember what year. I think it was in the 90s. I can't give you a year right now. But
okay.
I did Just for Laughs in Montreal.
Yes. Okay.
And I was going to, so it was a television, live audience, big crowd, and I almost had a breakdown.
Wow.
And fortunately, this other comedian was with me, and he said, no, you're not. You're not going to do that. You're going to have this greatest show. And he basically talked me out of it. talked me out of having a breakdown. Later on, he became a comedy hypnotist.
Okay.
And I still think about that to this day, but I mean, he really did save me. I was going to break down. Rich Guzzi.
Okay. Shout out to Rich Guzzi. All right.
Right. Yeah. Huge, huge shout out to him.
Yeah.
And you know something? I'll tell you something. The exact mirror situation happened to me on AGT. So I'm hanging out backstage with this other person, and this woman could sing. She was a great singer, and I guess her thing was she was a gate attendant for one of the airlines, and she sang over the microphone. And they thought, oh, this is a great little gimmick. It would be really great on this show. And as we get closer, we're backstage, and we're about to do our audition. and I'm really excited, you know, but she's having a meltdown and I'm trying to talk her out of it. I'm trying to talk her off the ledge.
Yeah.
And I'm going like, no, no, no. She's going like, oh my God, all these people, you see all these people out there. Oh my God. I go like, listen, you're going to be fine. You're a great singer. You got a good song. You just go out there and nail it. And I couldn't spend the whole time with her because I'm about to go on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. You got a job to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, one of us went through. So, you know, I mean, that she had, I think it didn't go for her. And it was really unfortunate.
Yeah.
It was really unfortunate. And another guy was on the show, was doing magic. Same thing. He was having a meltdown. His tricks weren't working. I said, don't worry. On the day, it's going to happen. It's going to work out. This is just a dress rehearsal. That's why they have these things.
Yeah.
And the thing is, maybe, well, you got to understand that all of the producers have a lot of pressure and weight on them. And if you just bomb your ass off on national television, that reflects poorly on them. Now, obviously, everybody wants to have the best show they can. Mm-hmm. And sometimes things are, I think, in my opinion, I don't know, you know, I think they are kind of manipulated to, you know, have a certain outcome. Because they know which ones they, well, let's pick this group and we'll have these in the final six, or, and these will be the final three. I mean, obviously some of that goes on.
Sure.
Because in the end, it's a reality show. Mm-hmm. And I've studied reality shows since.
The Real World?
Well, not that far.
Competition shows?
No, Survivor is when Survivor. I really started. Okay. When right. I really started studying reality shows.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm a fan of that. And they're all the same, right? They have a template, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That, cause that was something like you mentioned on another show that you did, that another pod that you did about like Living Color. You had a Living Color audition.
Yeah. Yeah.
How was that? Like how old were you, when you were doing, when you were like reading for that?
Horrible.
Why was it horrible?
Well, this is the weird thing. I had an audition on stage for In Living Color, and I got heckled, which is the thing that you don't want.
Did they know, like, it was like a stand-up show and everybody was doing sets or whatever? Is that?
It was a stand-up show, but there's alcohol.
And then people, did they know it was like an audition?
I can't remember.
I hate when people do that shit when it's like,
oh, it was terrible.
I hate that.
Right?
When, yeah.
Well, anyway, I thought, well, that's it. I'm not getting this. And I ended up on a plane and I'm flying to New York and I'm in front of Keenan doing an audition. Mm-hmm. But I just wasn't ready. It was too early on in my career. I think
why weren't you ready? You said, why do you think you weren't ready back then?
I knew I wasn't. 6 years.
Oh. Oh, okay.
6 years of worth of experience.
You're like 20.
I didn't have what they were looking for. So if you go and you do a sketch show, you've got to have characters.
You know,
got to be really well worked out. You've got to have a monologue or a dialogue or some kind of routine that you do with the characters. And I had never explored that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd done voices and I do voices in my show.
Right, right.
That are characters in that. But even that wasn't fully developed at 6 years into the routine, you know.
Yeah.
But this is when in the 80s and early 90s, things were going crazy. They were handing out deals left and right to comedians.
Right.
So, yeah.
So when you did, because Montreal, like back then, that was like where you would get a sitcom if they...
Yeah.
Like they were handing out TV shows at the airport, like they used to say.
Yeah. Well, get this. I'm in the van with my manager, and one of these people get into the industry types gets into the van. And it's this young woman, and she's rattling through these papers. And she's going, you know, and she's going, we find out that she's with one of the major networks. And she says, my manager says, oh, well, you know, one of my clients here, right here, Greg Morton, he's going to be on such and such a show. She goes, Greg Morton. Yeah, I'm supposed to see him. Hang on.
It's like you're seeing me right here.
Like my future is in this person's hands.
Yeah.
And she,
Just a lady who doesn't have her shit together is
right.
Yeah, that's great. Wow, man. It's a fascinating business that we're in.
It really is.
It's just like how your life could change, like just like that. And then a person.
But I'll tell you something. Just hang in there.
Yeah.
And watch your state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can create things in our lives. We are co-creators with God. And I think that you have to just be careful of what you put out there in the universe.
Yeah.
Even when you say something like, I don't like asparagus, someone will come along and plop a big plate of asparagus right down in front of your face.
Yeah.
It, the universe doesn't hear the word don't. They just hear asparagus.
Yeah.
So you got to go. You have to think about what you want. And then you've got to inject it with as much positive energy as you possibly can, and an emotion as well.
That's a really good advice, because I've been trying to do that a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to just be a little more positive and putting that energy out there. Like, good. When this happens, when
exactly.
I become a guest star on this show, when I become series regular, when I get to do these dates, X is going to, you know, X, Y, Z. Because it is that is true. Like, I don't want to, and it's hard. Like, cause you mentioned that, like having like the negative talk
yeah.
in your head, like mm-hmm. how did you combat with that? How did you fight it? How did you fight that negative?
Norman talk? Vincent Peale.
Okay. Who is
Power that? Of Positive Thinking.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. You know, I just read a lot of self-help books
mm-hmm.
and I tried to deprogram myself.
Mm.
And you know what? You can't stop. You have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
It never ends, because other people have negative energy.
Yeah.
And when you're around them, you pick up some of that, and you can't let any of that in. You don't have the luxury of a negative thought. You really don't.
Yeah.
And if there's anyone negative in your life, and you know, sometimes you kind of enjoy it. You know, you kind of get down there and, oh, you have a pity party. Woe is me. And it can be kind of fun, you know.
Yeah.
You get together with a couple of comics and you're bitching.
Oh, yeah,
and
talking shit. Yeah, it's, yeah. yeah.
You know, but where does that, that doesn't help.
Yeah, right, right. Know? And I think, like, it's good to, what's been good for me is hanging out with friends more.
Yeah.
And like people that I really care about. Like,
yes.
I've been able, like the last few months I've been able to do that. Like yesterday, hanging out with my friend, I was like, oh, that felt really good.
Good.
And I was like, I got some new headshots done yesterday. And I had this session with a guy that took my first real headshots in New York. And I said, man, thank you so much, man. You got me on Broadway. You got me these gigs.
Wow.
and I told him,
wow.
I said let's take it, so now there's more pressure on him. Like, get some better pictures. But it was so refreshing to see him and to be able to tell him that, and now he's at another level in his life where he's expanding and growing, and you know, it's,
that's right.
And it's,
Chris, you know what, you got to think about your life that way.
Yeah.
Let's say this is you now, and you're in the future, and you could go back to your past self, and you could go, don't even worry about it, Chris. Just chill. You're going to be on Broadway.
Yeah. Dude, I showed him that picture that he took, and it was just a headshot, and it was a nice headshot. It was a good picture.
Yeah.
And I said, man, I was 34. And I said, what would that, I said, man, that, what that dude didn't know back then. and he said, and the photographer, he said, Phil, he said, what would you tell that guy? I said, I would have told him to have more fun. Have more fun. And I have had fun. Like this, all this comedy and stuff has changed my life and made me a better person. Talking to people like you for doing this thing for 10 years. And it was just like, I was like, that guy could have had more fun though, too. Could have just really tried to enjoy it a little more and not be so serious about it.
That's right. Well, you have to stay in the moment, and that's what you're doing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to, and I don't know. Like, I'm glad we had this conversation, man. Cause it was, It almost didn't happen because of Aloy and company in Horizon Forbidden West.
Let me know how that game turns out, man. I really want to play that.
I would tell you to get, I would say get it, just buy it, and then when you get your PS5, just upgrade it.
Okay.
You can if you look it up, if you like Google it or go to YouTube and there's a way to update it once you get your PS5 and stay on those dudes at GameStop about that stuff, man.
All right. Encouraging words. Thank you, Chris.
I'm definitely going to have you back on. To talk more video games. I mean, like maybe when you're playing something, we'll chat about it and all that stuff. Can you plug your wares? I'll put stuff in the show notes where to follow you and tag you.
Great. Once I post. Thank you, my friend. Thank you.
But plug some stuff. This will go up next week. This will go up a week from today.
Okay. GregMorton.com is my website, of course. And then Greg Morton Comic for Twitter and Instagram.
Okay.
Both of those. And I've got an album coming out, hopefully. Awesome. We'll see when. I don't know when, but it's finished. It's in the can. We're just waiting to release. It's going to be called In the Future.
Okay. Nice.
And so I'm really excited about it. So that's what's happening right now.
Greg, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you for spending time with me. And thanks everybody for listening. And we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Chris. Good podcast. Thank you.
Thank you, man.